Ms. Buff, I was about to go to the applicant, but anything further, we'll come back to county staff at the end. But I just, before we move on, I just wanted to see if you had anything final you wanted to add.
I don't think so. I think we can go ahead and move on.
Okay. Then I believe William Palmer is there in the room. Is that right? Haven't heard anything yet.
All right.
Hey, there we go.
For the record, my name is William M. Palmer. I'm a land use planning consultant here representing the Kipperbergs.
Palmer, do you swear or affirm to tell the truth
in
the testimony you give here today?
I do so swear.
Thank you. Okay. Go ahead.
I know that you have not had a chance to review my letter or memorandum that I prepared for this hearing. But before we get into that, I want to indicate that the Kipperbergs do have comments that they would like to make pertinent to not only the proposed conditions of approval, but also the historical aspects of the permitting process, which began in 2014. Hopefully I can address some of the issues that were posed to staff in the hearing examiner's questions, but I want to start with a couple of administrative notes, so to speak. I reviewed on page 8 of the staff report the list of exhibits that staff also said that they reviewed in preparing the staff report. And I find some omissions in that list that surprised me. I've gone through such lists many times in the past and found that there's at least a citation of the particular application materials submitted, in this case now, for each of the four permits. And I didn't find that list. One of those submittal items, which actually came originally in 2019, been revised a couple of times. Last set of revisions took place in early March of this year, having to do with the site plan. And the site plan that's reproduced on close to the last page of the staff report is not the latest site plan. So it introduces a set element of confusion because it's not referenced there. I have in the attachments to my letter, which is lengthy, the 8.5 by 11 colored staff or site plan exhibits that I prepared and submitted to the county on the 11th of March of this year. And that's what should be referenced, particularly when we're talking about some of the issues on parcel 2-049, where they proposed and so-called off-street parking or off-site parking is to occur. One of the other admissions from the list of exhibits, which is also made an attachment to my letter dated August 23rd, is a what I titled at the time, which was submitted last August, a year ago, Notice of Application Filings and Support of Applications Number 21-0411 and 21-03049. Those are most pertinent to the conditional use permits for the project both the CUP and the event venue. when I submitted that last August, I could only submit my quote notice of application to those permits and not the other two. That was a problem apparently with the way the online permitting process works in Kitsap County, or at least did at that time. They've since changed the whole process, but at any rate, this is a very significant oversight, in my opinion, because not only does it discuss the problems of what we were frustrated about on the applicant side about getting to a complete application, but it contains, beginning on my page 11, the shoreline conditional use permit criteria. Two pages prior to that, you will find a discussion of the very citation from Kitsap County Shoreline Master Program and the RCW and WAC. There's a very detailed discussion of compliance criteria. When staff presented their comments earlier, they listed some of the criteria, but not all of it. And there is no discussion in the staff report about this project's compliance with that criteria. I believe there is, if you read that exhibit, it's about 14 pages long. Not unsurprising for things that I prepare, but in terms of length.
You know I'll read it.
Pardon?
You know I'll read it.
Well, I believe you do because I've seen your decisions in the past. I don't know how you might, because there's an exhibit number now for my letter, you have that additional exhibit. There are two other exhibits in there, attachments, one of which are the 8.5 by 11 graphics I referenced a couple of minutes ago. And the third is a letter from another attorney relative to on a different project, but has aspects of it relative to the issue of rural compatibility.
I had intended, again, I had said those would be exhibit 34, and then in my decision, I'll clearly delineate that there's multiple documents involved, okay?
In my letter, I address 9 different points of issues that I have with the staff report and the commensurate conditions of project approval that flow from the discussion text, discussion text is found in several different places before you get to conditions of approval, and you go back and forth. I'm not going to read my whole 13 pages, but I will highlight some of the things that I deal with, which already mentioned number one. Number two is the reliance on policies for rural areas to set conditions of approval. land use goal 13 and protection of Kitsap County's unique rural character, conditions about noise exposure, parking on adjoining property, number of events per month, quiet time for closing of events, use of existing residents for event venues, and number 9, possible future modifications to the approval that we assume will be granted here in 2022. I apologize. I'm suffering the effects of a cold, so my voice is a little rocky. I've already mentioned one of the significant reasons that the omission of the my notice of application filings is important. So I won't dwell on that more because I have written comments to that effect, and certainly in my attachment, it's quite detailed. When I know that the staff in dealing with the ordinance and effective time of application, there were no zoning ordinance criteria that could be used to set conditions of approval. So basically what they've done is they've gone back to the comprehensive plan and tried to make the argument that conditions of project approval could be set because of compliance with the comprehensive plan. Now, I'm not here today saying that the comprehensive plan is irrelevant, far from it. But what I am arguing is that there's a context in which goals and policy of the comprehensive plan have to be considered. And one of those is they goals and policies establish the ground rules for why Kitsap County will designate one area as rural residential, will zone another rural protection, will zone a third rural wooded, or any of the urban zones, including the establishment of the urban growth area boundary. Now, I have, it's not uncustomarily for me, I have a couple of digs at the Growth Management Act in my discourse, but moving on from that, once the county has established zoning, the comprehensive plan, while somewhat influential, does not become the overriding document for determining land use, use tables, purpose section of zones, things like that become the metric that is used to evaluate both permitted, administratively permitted conditional use, and of course hearing examiner approved conditions. The comprehensive plan, and I particularly mention the environmental policy act compliance that the county went through excuse me, prior to adopting the plan, they made an assessment of the comprehensive plan relative to the zones that would be established, implemented, and the prospective uses that could occur within the zones. That, in this case, supplemental environmental impact statement, didn't preclude the necessity of a SEPA analysis for individual projects, but it did say that generally the kind of uses permitted outright and conditionally would be permitted if they met certain criteria. And those criteria had to do with possible hours of use or parking and things like that. Bottom line, the conclusion I came to is the county staff did not successfully proffer an argument to say that the comp plan is more controlling than zoning. And I think that's an issue that cropped up, particularly when they went into the discussion of policies 57, 59, and also the citation of environmental policy 18, quoted on page 7 of the staff report. Problem with that latter instance is it requires environmental mitigation, but there's no subsequent condition of approval, subsequent discussion, or anything that stipulates what environmental impacts are going to be and how those might have to be mitigated. So that's a policy out of out of context. Then I deal with the whole issue of noise, and I'm arguing that the county has not established the basis for requiring that a noise study be done essentially before any events can be held on site. As the hearing examiner knows, I've been very I'm very aware of complaints against another event venue and the kind of noise complaints that have occurred there. But this is a different situation. And I go into detail why it's a different situation and why we object to the outright requirement to do a noise study. We're not suggesting that a noise study might not ever be required, but we don't believe that there are kind of complaints like in the other instance that might justify such a noise study at this time. As I said, I went into quite a bit of detail dealing with the county's noise requirements found in Chapter 1028 of the Kitsap County Code and why we object to those. Okay. Parking on the adjoining property, which is you, hearing examiner, have had questions about, and staff is apparently going to submit a supplemental analysis, which I would like to review. In my letter, I quoted it's a County Code 17490.010 off-street parking requirements, and noted in that thing, and I apologize for that quotation only because I may have referenced the latest code provisions instead of prior code conditions, and that doesn't reflect well on me because I have all prior codes of Kitsap County in my office, so I have the ability to reference them. I did not in this instance, but I believed that Kitsap County had prior approval under the codes that we, the zoning ordinance that we submit our applications under, when in 214 they approved parking, remote parking on a leased portion of the property immediately south of parcel 2-049. And that was under a different ownership at the time. They had an agreement to lease the west end of their property for parking and did so for 4 years. To me, that represented somewhat of a precedent for prior Kitsap County approval under the then existing regulations. Now, I have to admit the county could have made a mistake and not really reviewed it. I am not prepared to say what the county assumed at that time or didn't. probably one other comment about parking. As I have dealt with parking facilities on and off site for many years, it's apparent to me that there are two ways that I can meet parking requirements pertinent to one piece of property. One, of course, is to incorporate the other property as part of it, which is what staff is recommending, and the other is by easement. Now, it turns out that parcel where we propose the parking on parcel 2-049, that's under the Kipperbergs' ownership. So we're not dealing with third party, we're dealing with the family. And when I did the layout for how the parking could be used or could be employed on site, I did so in consideration that that piece of property might also accommodate a single family residential use. staff has added the short plat, which does show in the northwest corner of a site, a reserved drain field easement area. We can redesign our parking. Right now, our parking layout shows an encroachment on that area. It can be redesigned to avoid the encroachment, or we can avoid the issue, thereby avoiding the issue, or we can have a plat amendment done for that particular short plat. In other words, that's not an impediment. It's a design design issue. I'm back to the issue of number of events that can occur per month. Now, along with Josiah Kipperberg, who will testify in a minute, he and I both were in a meeting with county staff in February of this year, and it was at that point in time staff informed us that they were going to be recommending that the events occur no more than 50% of the time on the site. However, in the staff report, that 50% morphed into something else, and that something else is what we object to. They're basically saying that starting on a Friday, you can only have events basically two weekends of a month. That's how it works out. Not only that, they're suggesting that you have to have prior applications submittal indicating how that was going to be accommodated. Well, number one, they didn't reference it, but they chose that language directly out of the amended zoning ordinance that took place on June 28th of this year. We are not subject to that amended language. Our applications were submitted originally in 2019 because of a lot of back and forth and COVID issues. We didn't get official notice of application completion until last year in July. But that still predates June 28th of 2022. Second of all, they built their argument on the presumption that this is a rural area without any other issues other than quiet living environment. And that seems to be their whole focus, and that if you want to balance residential living, which they can see does exist on the site, with the event venues. If I take just a month with 5 weekends in it, I can hold 10 events. Well, all the rest of the time, rest of the month, there's no events. Or maybe a midweek events, which would be number 11. But we're talking only about a 30% usage of this residential property for events, way below the 50% they're saying should be allowed or could be allowed. The other problem I have, and anybody should have this same concern, is that in rural Kitsap County, you have lots of different environments. Not too far west, where Highway 16 is, you've got a lot of traffic noise going through a, quote, rural area. On one side of the road, west side, it's rural protection zone. On the east side, it's rural residential zone, like this property. Then you have the transfer station that occurs essentially, it's a little removed, but essentially in the southeast quadrant of Burley Road and Highway 16. That's has an impact on the neighborhood, but it was well assumed at the time the comprehensive plan was drafted.
I certainly understand, Mr. Palmer. I want to break in for a sec, because the challenge I see is that for these two issues, well, a couple issues here, the number of events and frequency, as well as your concern about noise and objecting to a study being required if sound amplification will occur. These are mitigation conditions in the MD&S. The MD&S was not appealed, so I have no authority to override the MD&S conditions, and these are specifically listed in the MD&S. Can you speak to that problem?
Well, originally we were going to file an appeal. When we found out the appeal costs not $500 like it has been for years and years and years, but now $1,500, that was a reason to pull back from the appeal, where we were planning to argue that issue extensively. But I'm aware of the fact that the MD&S mitigated conditions do have a requirement for noise analysis, but it does not have a requirement for limitation on number of events.
Well, it says there shall be no weddings or events for a minimum of 50% consecutive days in any one month.
Well, that limitation is not the same way it's worded in the proposed conditions of approval. That's part of my point. When we were originally advised that 50%, we didn't object because we knew that 50% of the time there would be no events on the site. It's only when you start saying, well, you have to measure it from Friday to Friday and no more than basically two Fridays of a month, that you begin to get into details that are not acceptable to the client.
But you agree that I, as the hearing examiner, do not have the authority to alter the MD&S conditions at this point.
I do. Unless we appeal it, you do not have that. Yes, I agree.
Okay, because I believe the case that solidified that did come out of Kitsap County. I wasn't the hearing examiner, but it is a big no-no to alter the conditions of an MD&S that has not been appealed. So I just want to be clear on where I stand. But go ahead, Mr. Palmer.
Okay, the last three items on my list has to do with what I call quiet time for closing of events. The way it's worded in the staff report, it says basically you have to be off the site by 10 p.m. with all equipment as well as all people off the site, and we don't believe that that allows for people that maybe lost their car keys and had to come back to the house to find whatever was misplaced, nor does it allow for the instance where events might be held in down the road entirely within the house, and the exit time might be much later than 10 p.m. But none in the instance of events inside the house, those have a minimal impact on the surrounding area, if any at all. And the only impact that I can foresee is having left their car up in the parking area and they have to exit maybe at 11, not 10. We just felt the wording of that condition of approval as proposed by staff was a bit restrictive. Another number 8 point is use of existing residents for event venues. My discussion talks about the focus of that language, and we don't think it addresses the fact that once the compliance with fire safety and building code issues are resolved, we may have events held in the house, and it doesn't really deal with that issue. And the last issue has to do with possible future modifications of this permit approval, being presumptive at the moment. In the past, I've witnessed cases that had to come back to a hearing examiner where they opened up the whole record and that became subject to new rules and stuff. And my concern is that if there is a modification, that only the modification proposed be the subject of a hearing examiner decision.
Sure, but on that point, if there were a proposed modification in the future, it wouldn't vest to the standards that were in place a year or two ago, correct?
That's my assumption, but I'm taking nothing for granted at this point in time.
Well, sorry, to clarify, I'm saying I can't fathom modification 4 years from now would somehow vest.
The modification for your group,
you would love that, but I'm saying I'm not.
No, the modification wouldn't vest, but the other aspects of the permit do, and that's what I would not like to see opened up if they ever do that.
I understand.
One last question, and then I'll let Josiah. I did include the 8.5 by 11 colored graphics. Do you want those submitted as a separate exhibit?
You mean these were? I have them in color, scanned in.
They were a part of the attachments to my letter, but I just wanted to know if you want them separately or not.
I don't need them separately, but I have them in color.
Okay.
I can zoom in, zoom out. I think I'm good there.
Okay. That's basically the gist of my comments at the moment.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Mr. Palmer. So Mr. Kipperberg, I think, was next. Yes. Thank you. I'll swear you in.
Okay.
Let me know when you're ready. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth in testimony you give here today?
Yes, I do.
And if you could state and spell your name for the audio.
Josiah Kipperberg, JOSIAH KIPPERBERG.
Great, thank you. Go ahead.
So to address, Mr. Hearing Examiner, some of your questions as kind of why the county has not brought up the old hearing examiner's decision, and also kind of how we got into this place, where we at as a business. I'm going to go through kind of the history of what we're doing here and kind of how we got here. We stood in the same position before and defended ourselves of allegations made by DCD and many different permits. We won some of these arguments and we've lost some of these arguments. This goes back to 2012. We first reached out to DCD to see what we needed for rural venues, and we were told that we needed a home business permit. And we went from there. It was brought to staff's attention that we did not have an adequate permit. And in that time frame, we had weddings and events going on. And we then applied for a ACUP, which was denied. We felt that that was the best effort to get the business in place. Then in 2012, we resubmitted for a CUP with 27 different issues that the county wanted us to do. In that regard, we got approval from the hearing examiner's decision, and in that, followed those guidelines to the best of our ability that we knew of. Back in 2017, we had a couple that wanted to do fireworks, and we said you have to get approval from the fire marshal, and the fire marshal later that year came back and said we were not in compliant in a few issues. In those issues, they brought up our parking, which we're dealing with today, as far as an SDAP and whatnot, which we already had in place from an engineer and the geotech, stating that we didn't need anything more. Staff, Scott Diener, strongly disagreed and threatened to take us to a hearing and get it revoked. We went back to our attorneys, the geotech and the and the civil, and they all sided with us. Scott Diener again said that they were wrong, and then went the day before hearing and canceled the revocation process. And there was other issues involved with that revocation that didn't withstand. And his comments were he strongly disagreed, and he would get the Department of Ecology's perspective on it. And they too sided with us to keep the parking area as is. But just as everything, if you follow somebody long enough, they're going to make mistakes. We did make mistakes. We used a building that was not that did not get a final back in 2001 when the building was used, or excuse me, it was built. I was using that as an office, my personal office and restrooms. We didn't feel as though that it was a fire hazard or a danger. We also used the inside of the venue for dressing and changing and storage, which in the hearing examination decision, you can see that was approved. So we got denied the...
All right.
Go ahead.
One sec there, Mr. Kipperberg. When you say use the inside of the venue, do you mean use the inside of what has also nominally been called your residence?
Yes. Yes, and we...
Okay, just trying to clarify.
Yeah, so we used it for dressing, storage, and as guests would come in, they would walk through the house, sign a guest book and whatnot, but we never went over the fire code of 49 people. We did lose that revocation back in 2018 due to we used a building that had never had a final. It had framing, electrical, plumbing, insulation, sheetrock, everything, but it never got a final. So in that process, we started after the revocation. Scott Diener and Dave Lyman, fire marshal, said, hey, dream big, put whatever you want in place, and kind of shoot for the moon. We did not file an appeal because we felt, in their words, you don't need to, because we'll help you get everything that you need as far as if you want inside space, if you want a commercial kitchen, if you want overnight stays, you're going to have to get another CUP anyways. So we did not file an appeal on their recommendation. Sounds like that is, it came back and kind of, go ahead.
I apologize. I'm now confused. You did not file an appeal of what are we talking about at the moment?
The revocation. The hearing examiner's revocation.
Okay. So the 2018 revocation that occurred, you didn't appeal because it was your understanding that you would need a new CUP for certain...
To use inside space.
Okay.
Yes.
Now I get it. Okay. Go ahead.
And feel free to cut me off if you want clarification.
Well, I will. Don't worry.
Okay. Perfect. So since then, 2018, the wedding gets revoked, the wedding venue gets revoked, and now we kind of go back and we hire Bill Palmer, and we start submitting for the permits that they tell us to get. And 2019, we go back and forth which one we need. One staff member says one thing, and then the other staff member says another. We have in writing from different staff members saying that we don't need certain permits, and then another staff member would say, no, that doesn't follow code. So that whole year, we went back and forth many different times of trying to figure out which permit we were supposed to get. We applied for many different ones, and then 2020 rolled around, and we applied for many different permits, but due to COVID, some of those expired because county was simply not doing any work. And then from there, we had events on the schedule already that DCD knew about. Jeff Remack, in particular, head of DCD, knew about these events. But just as the past, DCD has worked with us to come in compliance because it wasn't, nobody really thought it was a safety issue. It was more of a code violation. However, COVID happened, nothing was going on, and then 2001, we had events scheduled, and we were still working through the permit process. DCD knew about it, and then Dave Lyman and Scott Diener felt that though that it was a safety hazard, and we were called into court on a Wednesday, and we were supposed to appear in court the next day. We didn't even know exactly why we were there, but we were told that we had to cease all weddings because there was a safety issue, and we didn't have time to even represent ourselves. We had weddings the next day and that weekend, and we could not cancel on these bride and grooms the day before their weddings. We reached out to DCD to try to find some common ground, and they said no. So we continued a few events, and we started canceling events and finding new places for those bride and grooms to hold their events. In that process, we were already submitted and in place multiple different permits. And as you can see here, we got our four or five permits in place. And that being said, we had these in last year. We had 2022 booked out for events. And DCD, Jeff Remack, and Angela Silva, the assistant director at the time, specifically said, don't cancel your events. You will get this through. We'll try to get you to yes. And that was October and November of last year. They said, no problem, we will get this through in 45 days through staff review. We're almost coming up on a year at that point. So we had events on the schedule, booked and canceled, and now we're at this point as far as going through some of these issues. What's tough on this is, in that time frame, staff was extremely short with – individuals working for staff, but they had time to go down to the park, take pictures of our events.
And just to be clear, Mr. Kippenberg, the sort of fact that maybe events have continued since the revocation really is not going to have any bearing on my review and decision. So
I understand that, but I think the reason why I'm bringing this up is these are things that we agreed to with the county in the past, but you can see their diligentness in continuing to come after not only us, but many different venues and many different businesses around our area. So as I bring these things up, it is not as though that some of these issues of the past are irrelevant, but I see that being a repeated issue going forward. And what I mean by that is, even if we follow and you follow all these guidelines, the county's written these guidelines in a way where 3-4 years from now, they're going to come back at us again, and we spend more money in legal fees dealing with county than we do on advertising. So my issue is...
Go ahead. To clarify, when you say guidelines, are you talking about the required conditions to operate this commercial business that were part of the CUP? Is that what we're talking about?
That's correct. They've written in the staff report, they've written these in a way that does not benefit business owners, and it allows the county to continue to have oversight, which I'm totally okay for oversight, but there is a fine line between oversight and harassment. There's a fine line where it's this constant battle. We know we're going to go through this again, just like every other venue, most businesses in the area, they continue to kind of get harassed. But what my point is, as soon as I dig into some of these issues that staff has brought forward.
We haven't even started digging into the issues yet?
No, we haven't yet. And I apologize, it's long and lengthy,
well,
but...
I guess what I'm curious, are you reading from a written document, Mr. Kippenberg?
I am.
What I would suggest is, for one, you know, we're 3 hours into the day at this point. I will benefit greatly from having this in writing if we can make it an exhibit.
Absolutely.
But I also think maybe you could just bullet point.
Okay, I can do that.
Because ultimately, I'm the one making the decision. If it's written, I will be able to review it at my leisure. And there are other folks that may be interested in testifying as well.
I understand, so, and I know we're going on 3 hours, but we've been working on this for 4 years.
I grant that. I understand that. I'm just trying to let you understand that as the person that needs to make the decision, you know.
I understand.
Benefit me greatly to have this. So why don't we?
Okay, I'll go through these bullet points and we'll address these and I'll answer any questions that you may have. So I think the project quest here, we're looking at page number 2. The main thing is the reason why we're in this position is we were using the buildings, and we want both inside and outside use. We want to be able to have events inside and events outside. And that's the whole reason why that the permit got revoked is we used inside. Here does not specify that it's both indoor and outdoor use. And in our project narrative and what we've discussed all along, especially with Dave Lyman and Scott Diener, is we want to do inside uses. And Dave Lyman has agreed to a sprinkler system to allow this, but nothing is specified as far as a sprinkler system that is allowing that inside use. So if we do the sprinkler system, we want to be able to do the inside use. We don't want to be confined to be able to only do outside uses. We'll jump down to number 3. Mr. Palmer brought this up. This is as far as noise ordinance goes. I understand there's noise issues, but we also have to establish that we are in a rural setting, but we also are butting up next to a park, and we are being kind of blamed for park goers and their noise problems with no accountability to park goers whatsoever. So as we are able to choose kind of moving forward, county wants a noise company to bring in and measure any sound. But what they're stating here is they want to be the ones to okay which companies that we can use. I think as we sit as a company, I think it should do us the best benefit to be able to choose who we want to use, just as we are able to choose our attorney, our surveyors, civil engineers. I think we should be able to choose what sound company we're going to use, because ultimately that's the relationship that that we're going to have, not so much DCD. Does that make sense?
Sure. I can do, because it's written into SEPA, the MDNS, which was not appealed, but I understand the point. And so if you appeal, I guess, my decision under LUPA, maybe, or well, I don't even know at this point, but go ahead.
Okay. And the reason why we didn't appeal is DCD simply said, we first put in our $500, but the codes changed. It went to $1,500, and they simply said, we're not going to change our view. Our attorneys have gone over this. There's no point in appealing. If you want to appeal, you can. However, we're not going to change it. So we feel as though that it would have been a waste of money to appeal something that they wouldn't change. We said we would help and work together to write this, and they said, no, what we've written is it. That's why they created the first SEPA checklist, or the first checklist that they made. It was so vague, we couldn't really tell what they were asking. So we said, hey, we're going to appeal it, but we don't even know what we're appealing. So the second one came out, and we said, same thing, can we appeal this? And they said, yes, but we will not change it. So as far as that goes, if the noise, if they want us to use a third party, somebody that they approve, that, I mean, that could be anyone. I mean, that could be thousands of dollars, and that relationship could be tainted from the get-go. But if I understand, if it's in this checklist and we can't change it now, I will move on.
Yep, go ahead, move on.
Okay, as far as actually monitoring the noise, again, if we can't change this, that's difficult on our end. As far as they say right here, if the noise analyst monitor reports indications of noise levels exceeding the standard, all weddings and events must cease until DCD finds a sufficient noise mediation is in place. That is simply saying there's no due process, and anybody that calls in and says, oh, we heard something at 51 feet, DCD will come and shut us down with no proof, no analyzing of the situation at all, and it puts our business, and due to the type of business, in jeopardy. But then again, if we can't change this, it's kind of pointless to argue that. I'm going to jump down to page number 8. They talk about a parking lease. I think we are all aware that we own that land that we will be parking on, so there's no need for that parking lease. I'm going to continue to scroll down. We're on page number 11. Here we have a guest count of 165 using the parking area as a metric system to come up with those numbers. A lot of times that we have people shuttled in that don't park in that area, so it kind of puts us in a situation where, are we held to the 165 guests? Or if we have 166 people, DCD, standing in the bushes, has grounds for revocation. These are things, the reason why I bring up the past is these are all things that if DCD wants to come at us again in the future, they're going to go and say they had 166 people instead of 165. So we had no real dialect to come up with these numbers. This is staff just coming up with these numbers without our input. Going down to page number 12.
Sorry, and I got confused for a minute there. What is the page you're referencing?
This is from the staff report.
Page 12 of the staff report. Okay, sorry.
Yes.
I got it. A little confused. So you're not looking at the conditions, you're looking at these pages specifically.
That's correct. And then we'll get to those conditions at the very end.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. And as far as the noise goes, I know that DCD wants this third party, but also the Kitsap County Sheriff is the one that that manages this, and there's penalties in place. It's $250 if we go over those decibels, and they don't necessarily need to have a decibel reading machine there, but I don't feel as though that DCD should have the right to trump the sheriff. If the DCD wants to shut our business down, it should have due process. I'm going to be going through these pretty quick. Scrolling down to page number 14, staff, this is the first paragraph. Staff says there's no mobile homes, no recreational vehicles present supporting this project. We've discussed in prior meetings that RVs for somebody that wants to do an overnight stay, because we've addressed wanting to do overnight accommodations many times, and we specifically said RVs due to if there's not enough space on site, that somebody can bring in their RV to have some extra privacy. So we'd like to present that in this proposal. So the next one is we're dealing with the septic issue on the parking. It's not necessarily a DCD issue. I think that's more of the health department issue, and we will move that and have no issue with that. On page 15, it's talking about signage, and this signage is for the Department of Ecology, and we do have an issue with this as far as allowing access from the park. This is something that we are going to address with the Department of Ecology. We're fine with the sign. It's just where it is and who it is representing to have access to our property. We have park access on our beach next to us for any goer, park goer that wants access to the beach. But with our piece of property, we have our clients sign contracts with us for safety and insurance reasons. And if we allow people to come over from the park, we have no control of what they do on their free reign on the property. We deal with disturbances of people bringing their dogs and letting them run on unattended. We've had dogs run through my mom's house in the middle of the day because people don't keep their dogs on leashes. That we think that's going to create a major safety issue. I've been working with the Parks Department just to get signage. I've been working with them for over a year and a half, and we finally got signage, but there's nobody that polices that or enforces those signs. So if we put up a sign that even allows more people to come from the park, it's going to create more of a safety hazard. And as we have little ones, nieces and nephews, if we have one incident from a dog, it could be a serious, serious issue. And that was our concern. We're okay with the Department of Ecology having signage, and that's what we're trying to do, is provide people access to the beach through our property for handicap ADA accessibility. The park doesn't have that, so we're creating even a better opportunity for people to access the beach. But we see an issue with having the sign allowing people to come over. We have a lot of clients that have that make guest sign NDAs that will not take pictures or speak to the press. We have celebrities and government officials that come down and use our space, but if we allow the people to come over from the park, it creates a safety issue there. And also, with the crime that is going on, if we let the park come onto our property, it creates an issue as far as anybody that's there. So
that's we can move on from that point. I think that one's real straightforward.
Okay, perfect. And then we also, DCD wants us to take down signs that are off of our property. Our community has asked us to put up signs so people know how to get to our place instead of knocking on their doors or driving down their driveways. I hope that this is kind of a straightforward one. I think it benefits everybody to have small signs, and in the code, the sign states that it can be 2x2 on a county right-of-way, and this is on page 16, and we can send you these notes as well. Page 17, I'm going to go down through here. Page 19, it addresses the trellis, the arbor, the driving range pad, and the fire pit. We will move those. With the fire pit, though, in the HP or HMP, it's recommended that we leave the fireplace opened for a fire exit if the building catches on fire or the surrounding areas. If we close that off, we will have very small paths to exit in case of emergency. And also fire respond units would love to have access to get water off the beach or off out of the water. And if we do not have that open area, as the BMP states, it's going to create an issue. Does that make sense? We can move all those things out of the buffer area, but in our habitat management plan, we feel as though it would make a lot of sense to keep that open. But everything else can be moved. Not an issue at all. And you can see in the image in 2012 that there's no driving range pad and no trellis deck, and that's on page 20. But we do have the fire pit area there. It makes sense, especially a central location for any exit. Moving on, we're getting into the conditions. On page number 23, these are recommendations. This recommendation is for all the permits being obtained and having my mom live in the space and has to live there full time. We kind of see there's a concern there. If she passes or something happens to her health and she moves out, we have the ADU and the main space that code says you can't rent both of these out. But the reason why we are presenting and getting the ADU is for people to stay in the ADU and rent the facility at the same time, because it makes sense if a bride and groom gets married there and they want to stay the night there. That's kind of a conflict of interest as far as the whole reason why we got the ADU is for people to stay
there. It's really just a commercial property, is that right?
Come again?
It's really just a commercial property. It's just essentially mostly a wedding event venue space.
Yes, and that's why we've told DCD we want to do overnight stays.
Okay.
So if people get married there, they can stay there. And we have in the staff report, they say that quiet time starts around 9. We're just going to follow the noise ordinances at 10, but they're asking people to move off the premises. But if we're having overnight accommodations there, both in the main space and in the ADU, kind of defeats the purpose of having getting everybody off the premises. We can't police who the ones that are staying there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it wouldn't be an ADU. It'd be, it'd be the same structure, but, this would more closely resemble a B&B or a hotel or something to that effect. But, but that's fine. I get it.
So that's why we've discussed this from the beginning, is we want the venue, but we also want overnight accommodations, which puts us in an interesting spot. Page number 23, number 6, there shall be no more than one event per day on each day, or each day shall be considered its own event. If we have somebody stay the night, it kind of puts us in an interesting spot where Does the next day consider one day? Yes and no, but they're staying the night. That's why we wanted overnight accommodations from the get-go. Okay, moving down to page number 24, discusses the time of event, the time. I don't know if these are grammatical errors or what this looks like. The hours of operation shall be between 8 a.m. until 9 p.m., 8 p.m. on Sunday, from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., or 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. I'm not sure I understand what that means. The event shall cease the operations and begin its equipment teardown and dispersion of attendees, including the contractors and vendors. I don't know if that's saying 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. or 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. We're a little confused there.
All right. Trying to get clarity from county staff, I suspect it's just, that second phrase, that second sentence relates to when the breaking down of the event needs to be, as opposed to the traditional hours of operation, but we can ask staff what they intended.
Yeah,
I believe that's correct.
Okay, and even so, if we're doing overnight accommodations, quiet time in rural areas is 10 p.m. anyways, but if we're having overnight stays to usher people out and get them out, I don't know what that fine line is, but the way the code or the way this staff report is written gives DCD the ability to try to differentiate between a guest and somebody that's staying there. I don't know what that line looks like, but I think down the road we can make that work and figure out and just get more clarification on it. Number 11 says no amplified sound may be used on the premises. There's many times, especially even if we don't even do amplified sound outside, many times people have inside music as they get ready. I don't think this applies to inside, but it doesn't specify that we can have amplified music only on the inside or outside. But I'm assuming it's only on the outside, because obviously if you have amplified music on the inside, nobody can hear it anyways. But there's no clarification on what that looks like. Does that make sense?
You've got a sweet boombox, and you want to be able to use it in the bedroom inside the house.
Yes, any amplified music inside.
Yeah, I get it.
Okay, but it doesn't specify if we can do that or not. Now, if we have got music on the outside and somebody can hear it, that's one thing. If we have music on the inside, nobody can hear it, shouldn't be an issue.
I fully understand the point.
But it doesn't specify that here.
I just want to clarify for you, Mr. Kipperberg. What we have here, these are the recommended conditions by county staff. I, as the hearing examiner, were I to approve this, and I have not made a decision, but I have the authority to alter, amend, add to, delete these versus the NDNS that was already issued under SEPA. I can't do anything about, because that's a separate process. It's done, and I can't reopen and address that. But ultimately, were I to approve this, it would be the conditions I, as the hearing examiner, impose.
Okay.
These are the ones staff has recommended. So when you say clarification would be helpful, blah, 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 I'm listening. And were I to approve this, I would make every effort to make things as clear as possible. So if that helps for you, keep that in mind, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Appreciate that. That's why I'm addressing some of these, is just make sure we're on the same page. Okay, further down, the parking area, page number 25, it's parking shall be stripped to ensure adequate parking. It'll be a grass parking lot. I don't know what that stripped looks like, but in the fire, as far as Dave Lyman goes, as far as fire safety, keeping that grass mowed down, if we have strips in any way, that's going to create more of a hazard. So if we just leave it as an open field, even with the SDAP in place, I feel it would be most beneficial to have no stripping to create any fire issues. Because if we put blocks, chalk, anything, you won't be able to mow it, you won't be able to maintain it. And any any fashion that makes sense. Also, number 17 talks about a signage asking residents or asking people to leave and be considerate of noise. I'm not sure whether this is a code thing. Even if they're in the parking lot and they're quiet, I don't.
Mr. Kippenberg, I'm going to make a suggestion, I think. Well, this is what I suggest. You had said that whole history you read a while back, that's a written document, right? You have notes that you want. So I was going to suggest we have that submitted as number 36.
Okay.
Clearly, you exhibit 36. Clearly, you have concerns. I know consultant Bill Palmer has concerns. You know, I would suggest you and Mr. Palmer just go blow by blow and give me what you think the conditions should be, rather than us do it ad hoc right now and look at every single one of these. I think it would be helpful to have you guys prepare a document, because I think you're right to say, were I to approve this and these are the conditions, that would be the basis or foundation for, you know, code enforcement or revocation or anything like that if something went wrong. So just,
okay,
again, for A, for timing, B, because I'm trying to take notes, but I, you know, it's not easy after this long to just try to keep track of everything. So I think that would be highly beneficial. Are you amenable to that?
I think that'll work.
So we'll make 37. We'll call it the applicant's sort of red line proposed conditions.
Would it be 37 or 36?
Well, I thought Mr. Kimberberg had sort of a history of the site that was separate, but is this all one? So I'm thinking whatever that is one thing, and then if he and Mr. Palmer doesn't have to be included, but if he wants to be you two or just you or whoever can sort of put together, you know, redline this document, these conditions, and say, we think it should say this or not say this, here's why, blah, blah, blah. I think that would be very helpful.
Okay. Then I think that'll be easier for everybody.
Yeah.
It's already written out. Those are two different documents, the history of what we've gone through, and then also this document from staff. And we can kind of go from there.
Great.
Okay, do you have any questions for me at all?
Let's see, where was I? Okay, so with that, we talked about the site. Let's see, you own that, the parking area. Hold on, let me go back to my notes. If you know the answer, how are restroom facilities? What does that look like when you have an event with lots of people? Are there standing cans? Do people just use the facilities inside?
Yeah, so we have from health. We've got an approved expansion to the drain field, and we've got on-site bathrooms that will be in place. They're already in, but they'll be an after-the-fact building permit in the garage.
Okay, so the expansion to the drain field you're referencing occurred maybe back at when you got the CUP before?
No, after the permit was revoked, we went to the health department and we've got a designed, approved expansion to the drain field in place. If this gets approved, then we will put that in.
Got it. Okay. I think the only thing I saw in the record from health was from about 2019. And from my read, that just related to adding an ADU versus adding events with massive quantities of folks. But maybe I misread that.
Yes, it is. We did studies as far as the usage for the toilets and the ADU. So okay. It's a combination.
Sorry, the events and the ADU, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, so that should be in the record somewhere?
Yes.
I mean, it's in there. I just didn't read it right. Okay. And then the way water is on site, is it? Are you in the municipal system? Is it a well?
This is a well. This will be a class, I believe, a class B, which we've had already engineered. And as soon as this process is finished, if it is approved, then we'll turn that into a class B, and it'll be a monitored public system.
I think those are just the real quick thoughts, questions that I had for you, Mr. Kippenberg. And again, I just want to be clear. I'm not trying to cut you off. I recognize what a process this has been for you. I'm not trying to undermine or you know, give you a shortened time period. It's actually the opposite, to the extent that I fully recognize that slop, you know, conditions that are unclear cause more problems than almost anything. And I really think it would be beneficial. Mr. Palmer can tell you all about other instances I've been involved in as the hearing examiner where I deal with that. But I think it would be helpful to sort of have you and him really clearly delineate these things, because, were I to approve this again, those conditions that would be in my decision would be the controlling document, as it were. And so I think that would be really helpful.
Yeah, our main concern is, the whole reason why we're here is to have indoor vents and outdoor vents. And if in this process that we were supposed to appeal that, this means nothing if we can't do indoor vents, because that's why we got this revoked in the first place. Okay. If we can't do indoor vents, then we're back to square one. And I'm not sure where that falls. Does that fall under these recommendations, or does that simply fall under the NDA? I'm not sure what that looks like, but I'm guessing I'll find out here in the next hour or so.
Sure. I don't believe the MDNS explicitly addressed indoor events, so I think that's a separate issue. So.
Okay.
But we can ask Mr. Diener later when we come back to county staff. So, did that conclude your testimony, Mr. Kippenberg?
Yes.
Did you have other sort of members of the applicant team, family members, et cetera, anyone else there in the room you were hoping to have come up and testify before we move to the public?
No.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you. That said, are there other members of the public in the room that were interested in testifying on this proposal? Yeah?
Yes, okay. We do have someone.
Hi. And I'll swear you in. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth in the testimony you give here today?
I do.
And could you state and spell your name for me?
My name is Douglas Soule, S-O-U-L-E.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
I'm one of the closest neighbors to the Kippenbergs, and I've been in my place for a while. I'm a retired captain in the Navy. And I've been kind of an overseer and an organizer of the community since I've been there. For instance, we had dirt roads coming all the way in on the county road. And I went to the DCD and asked them what it would take for me to be able to get pavement on that road. And I was told, don't even try it. It's never been done, can't be done. And I said, really? Why? And I said, well, first of all, you can't get all your neighbors to all agree to it. And secondly, the county is going to have all kinds of problems with what you're doing. So I'm just giving you a little history here. I'm not going to be too long. So I created a road maintenance association in our neighborhood, and it was dues paying, and we had a goal to maybe somehow pave our road. And it was one person at the DCD that really helped us out, who didn't have a negative attitude, and told us exactly what we needed to get to give to the county. Okay, one of those things was signature and approval of every individual in that whole community. Okay, not only on Meridian Road, which is our main road, but also the branches of Luna Vista and Brainbury. All of those people access through from Banner Road through that Meridian. Okay. Every single person signed that document, and then the county wanted us to have it recorded as well, so we recorded it. Every single person 3 years later coughed up $2,000 a piece, and our association put in $20,000, and we paved that road. That took a lot of leadership, it took a lot of communication, it took a lot. But what we have there is we have a community that works together. And they work together to help these people get this wedding business. Because when it came time to look at whether the county would approve the business, we again had to get signatures and notarized statements from every single individual that accesses those three roads. And we did, 100%. Okay? Nothing's changed today, okay? If you look at the residents, including the very newest one that was in conflict for a year while the other person before him had bought that place for an investment purposes and was not living there. Everyone now in that community, including the new owners of that particular property that was a dispute of parking for the wedding venue, are 100% on board and supporting this, what we feel is almost a historical, it's something it's something that Olala can have as something special in their territory, in their area, okay? I live as close as anybody to them. But there's a hill 250 feet tall between us. I don't have any problems with noise. My neighbors don't have any problems with noise that are closest to us. I don't see as that we need to really be too strict on noise control down there. Okay? The parking has been the big issue. From the beginning, DCD wanted such mitigation up there on that piece of land, it was going to cost tens of thousands of dollars just to do water mitigation. I advised him to do get a geotech to do a survey up there. The geotech said there's no need for any mitigation whatsoever here. All right? DCD didn't like that. Made us do it again. Another geotech. Made him do it again. Another geotech. All of them say there's nothing needed here. And this shows some of the overreach that I've seen consistently from DCD. Because the comprehensive plan for Kitsap County clearly states that the county is going to highly encourage small businesses development in Olala. But actions don't show that. Does that make sense, sir?
Yeah, I understand your point. I thank you.
Okay. I have a couple of things. That's the end of my speech, okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Did you want to submit? Looks like you have written comments. I'm happy to have those included as an exhibit.
I've just got notes. I can put it together for you if you want.
It's up to you, but it would be in the record if you would like that.
All right. I'll try to get that to you soon.
Yeah, the clerk behind you, when we're done, she'll indicate how we can do that, but... We'll get
two people felt so strongly about having some say in this issue today is they put together some letters here, and I want to read them. To whoever it may concern, I'm writing this letter in support of the Edgeworld or House wedding business and event business. We are a neighbor whose property directly connects to the north and would love to see the event continue. Watching this family grow, the business has been something exciting in our community in support of an entrepreneurial family. We are not negatively impacted by the venue in any way. We don't hardly know that our events happening when they are happening. Our community is small. Not only does the venue provide a local place that can host larger events, there is nothing like it close by. It also provides jobs to young adults, which are hard to come by in a rural area. We hope that you will support the thriving business in our community that not only gives back to the community, but is respectful of its neighbors and has been supported by our small community from day one. Another letter. I am writing this letter in support of the Edgewater House. Growing up as neighbors to the Kipperberg family and working at the venue in college gave me such appreciation for the family and for the venue itself. It's a gem of a place that the family has graciously shared with others for many years while building a business that benefits our small town of Olalla as well as surrounding areas. The venue is courteous, professional, innovative, and something the local neighborhood enjoys having as an added part of our rural town. While in college, there were a few local places to work, and I was able to get college full-time and work on weekend nights at the venue to help pay for my school. Please support this family and what they have built from the ground up. It should be something we celebrate and are proud of. It is a true treasure to Kitsap. And that's it, sir.
Great. And I would suggest, one, if you can also have those included, we'll just sort of have your materials. We'll make those Exhibit 38. And if those folks are fine having those letters included in the record, I'll include those as well.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. So before you leave, just make sure you get Ms. Walston's info as needed. I don't believe there are other folks there in the room. Is that? We'll give it one sec here. In the hearing room. I know about Zoom here, but no one else in the hearing room that wanted to testify at this point?
No, that's everyone.
Okay, and then I have someone identified as an attendee, as interested party. Hi. Can you identify yourself for me?
Yes. Do I need to have my camera on?
No, you do not. You're welcome to, but
how do I do that?
Give me just 1 second. I'll switch your permissions. 1 second.
And can you, while we're trying to figure that out, can you just identify who you are?
Sure. My name is Linda Murnane, spelled L-I-N-D. A, M, last name, M-U-R-N-A-N-E.
Okay, thank you. And while we're, again, trying to figure this out, I'll swear you in. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth in the testimony you give here today? Oh, somehow you ended up muted again there. Maybe I'll just switch over.
Okay.
Hi, Ms. Murnane, do you... I didn't hear the answer. You swear to affirm, is that right? You swear or affirm to tell the truth in the testimony today? Is that accurate?
That's accurate.
Great. Thank you for being here. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to offer a counterpoint to the person that just spoke. I live right next to an event venue in Olalla, and I'm going to take the 100,000 mile feet level and be generic about who the event venue is.
I'm familiar myself. Yes. I'm familiar
I'm having a little PTSD here today.
I apologize. It is, part of my job. I sometimes, people do not ultimately agree with conclusions I make, but go ahead. We're not going to focus specifically on that property, but
right. This is just related to noise. And it's just a cautionary tale of what could or may happen to the neighbors and the park attendees to this property. Any future neighbors who, you know, I know there's undeveloped land next to the property. It's really hard to explain the impact of noise if you haven't lived through it. Is there any way I can share my screen with an example of what kind of noise is a possibility, or?
No, that is not possible, unfortunately.
Okay. So let me try to explain what it's like for us and the other parcels that surround this event venue. You know, when you've been at a stoplight and somebody's got these booming stereo that's just pounding the windows of your car, and you're sitting at a red light. I mean, I imagine just everybody has been in that situation. That's what it's like for us every weekend. And we can't get away from the stoplight. It's there, and it's disruptive, intrusive. We can hear it inside our home with the doors and windows closed. And we have the only recourse we've had, because the sheriff office is the in charge of noise complaints, is we've been told to call 911, which we hate to do, but we do. So we're caught in this. We call 911. We have decibel meters, but because we're not professionally trained, the decibel meters are not professionally calibrated. The sheriff's deputies do not carry decibel meters. Then if they open an incident report and they send it to the prosecuting attorney's office, it sits there, and either there are a couple of cases still sitting there. We get a notice that it doesn't reach the level of burden of proof, so there is no recourse for the noise we're getting.
Right, and as opposed to what we're getting, your concern is you're just, you want to provide a cautionary tale. I mean, yeah. I certainly can take judicial notice of the exact case you're talking about, because I am very familiar with it. But this is not the forum to relitigate that particular.
Oh, no, and that's not what I'm trying to do. What I'm trying to do is it appears as if the county has tried to address that to have trigger mechanisms so that people are not caught in the vortex that we're caught in. Am I correct in that assumption?
Well, I'm not the county, but...
No, but I mean, I just listened to what they call it, an MDNS and the SEPA, that looks like they're trying to get something included that would help.
There is information in the SEPA MDNS, a requirement related to a noise study if amplified noise is going to be used.
Okay. Well, that was our main concern, you know, the premise that if there's oversight, that's harassment. You know, if you're not violating your permit, you have nothing to worry about. And the hardest thing for us is to prove that noise is an issue. And so I hope that's considered when they, in the conditions of any future event facility permitting process, because it protects new property owners, old property owners, you know, vacant land that they're trying to sell, which is what we have where we are. And that is our biggest concern is noise. So
I certainly understand the point, Ms. Renee.
Okay. So I would like to avoid, you know, there's several other event venues that are planned to go into Olalla. And because sound travels so far in rural residential, it does impact the rural character of where we live. We've lived in this house for 30 years. We bought it from my husband's parents, who lived here 30 years before that. And there is a definite a negative impact in the rural way of life that we are being subjected to.
Sure. Great. Well, thank you very much for your comments today.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we had one other person, Laura Boyd. If you are interested, you can use the raise hand feature. This was also on the Zoom there. I'll wait just a sec to see if Laura Boyd is interested. If so, you just hit the raise hand button. Wait. That is possible, right? Yeah. Okay. I minimized. Okay. For a sec. Okay. It doesn't appear that the raise hand has gone up. So then at this point, what I would suggest is quickly, if I could have Mr. Palmer come back.
For the record, William M. Palmer.
Thank you, Ms. Palmer. So just to be clear on kind of what I've agreed to have added to the record, there were some additional public comments in advance of the hearing that were sent my way. We were going to make those Exhibit 32. The two-lot short plat information would be 33. Your memorandum, which I will certainly break down into subsections, but that was going to be 34, and that also included the revised site plan, et cetera. A short memorandum from Scott Diener on the parking analysis he testified to, because I couldn't write fast enough to track that. And then 36 was going to be these sort of history, as it were, notes, et cetera, from the applicant, Mr. Kipperberg. 37, this is where you would come back in if so interested, Mr. Palmer, but I thought, it, you know, again, Mr. Kipperberg and you, if you're helping him, I think thought it would be useful to have you submit a sort of red line mock-up of the proposed conditions to the extent that, you know, clearly I know you've addressed some of this in your memo already, and I think Mr. Kipperberg has too, but I think you know, having done this job certainly longer than me, that the conditions can be vital, and you know, getting clarification as much as possible is helpful. So that was 38. That was 37. 38 would be Mr. Soule's comments, along with the two additional letters of support, I believe, that he read into the record. Those are the 38 I have. And Ms. Walston, if you can just, is that okay? So with that, Mr. Palmer, I just want to give you a minute if you had any final thoughts on behalf of the applicant or yourself.
No, I think our final thoughts will be in our recommended edits to the conditions of approval. I guess just need clarification on how much time we've got to submit that, but well, you indicated earlier Scott Diener's stuff would come in by next week, I guess.
So as a matter of course, we do leave the record open one additional week in case there's tech issues. And so if you'd like, you can wait and submit it after that. It's really, I'll give you as long as you would like, Mr. Palmer.
I think we can have our comments back to you within a week after we receive Scott Diener's thing, which our comments will be both addressing issues he's raised in his letter plus the revised or redlined conditions of approval.
There you go. So the record, for all other purposes, would essentially be closed September 1st. That would also include Mr. Diener's a short memo on the parking issue, and then the applicant, I'll give till the 8th of September to submit the sort of what I've said is Exhibit 37, which would be the sort of proposed red line conditions and any other thoughts on the related to that parking.
Okay.
That makes sense?
Makes sense.
Okay. And sorry, there was nothing else you wanted to add, Mr. Palmer?
I think you've heard enough for today. Plus,
it's been a long day, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Mr. Palmer. So then at this point, I will then check in online there with Mr. Diener and Mr. Poff. We'll take them one at a time, but Mr. Diener, unmuted first. Anything on behalf of staff from your end there, Mr. Diener?
I can get a memo out to Amanda on the parking that I discussed today. So that'll be easy to do. I did want to address one thing that I heard earlier, which was the ability to park RVs and trailers at the parking lot. I presume not at the house, but at the parking lot. And Josiah, I believe, had indicated that they had asked for that. I don't see that was asked for, and if it was missed, but I don't see it in the application, in the narrative for the CUP. And I also feel that that is a major change to what has been requested so far. And I definitely believe the neighbor that is living next to that might have something to say about that as well. So I don't believe that parking RVs was a part of the application, nor has it been considered by DCD. And then I also wanted to clarify something about future alterations to an approval. We have, and our code speaks to this, and I think Mr. Palmer is familiar with this, we have code that speaks to major changes and minor changes to approve decisions. Our code breaks down what's considered major and what's considered minor. If it's minor, it's vested to the code that was in effect at the time of the application was declared complete. If it's major, it is vested to code that's in effect at the time of the major application was declared complete. And so let me back up. When I said for the minor, it was at the time the original application was declared complete is what I'm meaning there. And the major, it would be vested to code in effect at that moment.
And I assume, Mr. Diener, that the minor one is an administrative process and the major one very likely comes to me or something to that effect.
It follows the original application approval process, whatever that may be. So if it was a type 3, it goes to a type 3 approval. If it was a type 2, it goes to a type 2 approval.
Okay. Great. Did that then cover what you wanted to? That take care of what you wanted to cover there, Mr. Diener?
Not everything. I think that I think Josiah asked some questions about, you know, how do we get to where we want to be with indoor use? And I think if you were to take a look at the conditions that begin at with 49, building and fire safety, the fire marshal has done a good job, or at least attempted to do a good job, I'll say, in identifying conditions that will say if you want to make changes to the building, you need permits. I mean, that's essentially what those permits are, or what those conditions 49, 50, and 51 all are kind of leading to, 52 as well. So there's a host of conditions that address future expansions, or what he calls in 52, future construction, change in use, expansion of use, or any portion of the accommodations and addition of a commercial kitchen, overnight accommodations. All of that is addressed in the conditions. And so, simply put, a permit is needed for that, but the approval that we're offering here would allow for that, subject to those permits.
Okay.
And then I'll defer to Colin on any other remaining issues.
Great. Thank you. And Mr. Palmer, feel free to sit down. I didn't intend to go back to you a final time. As much of a joy as it is to have you appear before me, you're off the hook for the rest of the day. And Mr. Poff, any final thoughts, as it were?
No, I don't think I really have much. I was going to actually, I know that Mr. Kipperberg talked about indoor use as a kind of a paramount issue, and Scott kind of covered what I was going to mention in terms of the CUP that we have here doesn't you know, prohibit that. It just points to those conditions as what would be needed for that further use. So that was the main thing I wanted to point out. And then, as far as the additional exhibits, that we're going to get you. I sent the plat already to Amanda, and Scott is working on that memo. So,
great.
I don't think there's anything I wanted to add, but I would offer I could clarify any conditions of approval if you need me to now. But other than that, I don't have anything to add.
I'm probably too brain dead for that to be helpful at the moment. This late in the day already, but Mr. Diener had a final thought. There we go.
I'm looking at my notes, and one of the things that Mr. Palmer had testified to was that the NOA process wasn't followed. We did a combined NOA for all four of the applications at once. So one of the things that I think you had asked for, Mr. Hearing Examiner, was completion or vesting dates for the permits. We can get that to you and a better explanation or more explanation of the combined notice in a memo as well.
Sure. I guess I would suggest, I think it's probably all there, but rather than rush through something today or tomorrow, Mr. Diener, just take the time, clarify that the parking analysis you did, because again, I couldn't track quite as quickly as you were saying, and I don't have the older version of the code. It would be helpful if there's a way to get me a PDF of at least, what used to be Title 17 or is still Title 17 or some, the earlier version that this would relate to. I don't need the entire code, but, that would be helpful. We don't need that to be an exhibit because theoretically it is, judicially cognizable. It's just not easy to find unless it is online. It might well be. But yeah, I would suggest, if in addition to the sort of clarification on parking, if you wanted to add that clarification as well related to the, and the NOAA thing, I got a little confused because I also think at one point Mr. Palmer was talking about his, what he titled notice of application in his own submissions, but those are not the NOAAs that the county sends out. So he included in the record as part of his memorandum, something entitled NOA, Notice of Application. I think that might have been partially what he was talking about, but any clarification, at least in terms of vesting, just so that's all crystal clear, would be very helpful.
Thank you.
Yeah, we can provide that.
Okay, so I think then with that, we can conclude our hearing today. To clarify, we are ultimately, I think the final number ended up being 38 exhibits that will ultimately come in. Excuse me. 38 exhibits ultimately, and the record, apart from the sort of applicant's proposed condition conditions they're gonna provide. We'll close a week from today, and then I gave Mr. Palmer, I said he could have, him and Mr. Kipperberg could have till September 8th to submit their sort of proposed conditions. And then I will take all of this under review, as well as the testimony we heard here today, and ultimately produce my decision on these requests. And once I have done that, I believe the county does make these decisions available. But Mr. Poff, maybe you could just quickly speak to how will folks be able to get my decision when it comes out if they're interested in seeing it.
We make the decision available. Maybe Amanda can
all right. Amanda Walston, go ahead. I don't need to swear you in. It's just a for the benefit of the people, can you just tell folks?
Sure. The notice of decision will be sent out to the applicants, any interested parties, agencies. We also post it online on our Hearing Examiner webpage. That'll be available right in line with the same hearing date, which also shows the staff report. So that's accessible there.
Thank you, Amanda.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So with that, I will let everybody go. I'm sure people are starving, ready to move on with their day. I really appreciate everyone taking the time, though, to answer my questions, to testify, et cetera. And with that, we'll end the day. I wish everyone safety and good health. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.